Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Now to our guest, Dr. Naomi Wolf, via Zoom from Massachusetts. We're going to talk about seeing the pandemic in the greater scheme of a rising institutional tyranny. For those of you who are not familiar with her remarkable career, Dr. Naomi Wolf is the CEO of the Daily Clout. That's a nonprofit that enables people to see and share and affect live legislative bills, which otherwise would be largely non-transparent and passed behind closed doors. She's perhaps best known as a feminist leader, a journalist, an author, writing about women's rights, abortion, the Occupy movement, the emerging totalitarianism in the United States, and more recently, the COVID pandemic and the creeping institutional tyranny. Her articles have appeared in The Nation, The Guardian, Huffington Post. She's authored the best-selling book, The End of America, A Letter of Warning to a Young Patriot. And her most recent book is Outrages, Sex, Censorship, and the Criminalization of Love, which retells a history of state-sponsored censorship and violations of personal freedoms by recounting the story of John Simons, a 21-year-old Oxford student, his struggle for same-sex relationships in the middle 19th century. She graduated from Yale University as a Rhodes Scholar to attend Oxford University, where she later received her doctorate in English language and literature. In the past, she's taught at Barnard College, Stony Brook, and George Washington Universities. She's the host of the weekly program Daily Clout, which can be heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. It's very popular. Her website is dailyclout.io.
Yes, that's
Naomi.
Yes, that's correct. Dailyclout.io.
And by the way, Naomi is hosting a webinar tonight at 7:30 through her dailyclout.io website to teach people how to sue their school boards over various pandemic rules and mandates. Nice to have you with us today.
It's so great to be here with you. I'm a big fan, so thank you so much for having me.
Naomi, I've been regularly covering events in Canada since the convoy started, so I don't want to go into the specific events of paramilitary police and the violence and the arrest or freezing truckers and their supporters' bank accounts. And that's what they're doing, by the way. So I'd like to open our discussion by having you look at the larger and more dire agenda unfolding that requires more attention. This is just one part of that agenda. In some ways, what we witnessed in Ottawa is simply a drill that will migrate to other nations and very rapidly. Remember, we went from peaceful demonstrations to brutal takedown of the drivers in less than 10 days.
Right.
And yes, it was an inconvenience to the owners of businesses in that immediate area, but consider what has taken its place. And now they're saying that the laws being passed, much like our National Defense Authorization Act, the Patriot Act, are indefinite. They can be here forever. Take your time. We have no commercials. The forum is yours to expand on this.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Nall. I mean, your overview is very comprehensive and very accurate. There's nothing with which I would disagree. I think you're exactly seeing the pieces fall into place that have been planned. I think you're right about the characters. I wrote an essay on my Substack about Canada and what the fall of Canada means for the U.S. And I highlighted, you know, exactly the same themes that you're seeing. The extension in the same week that Trudeau became a dictator, essentially, in Canada, President Biden extended, as you said, the Emergency Powers Act. Every previous eight times it had been extended since the start of the pandemic here, it had a termination date. This time it is open-ended. There is no termination date. And what's incredibly scary, like, every morning I wake up thinking, you know, for a minute that things are back to the way they were in 2019. And then the horror of whatever latest, you know, escalation of tyranny kind of presents itself to me. And something I didn't know is what you shared, that intelligence operatives in the United States may be supporting Trudeau. And I certainly have noted that Biden did not condemn Trudeau. This is unbelievably bad news for the United States. And I'm surprised that the national security establishment is not up in arms, you know, those who are not colluding, because the threat to us is profound. Not only does the Emergency Powers Act that Biden extended and kind of updated allow him to flow billions of dollars into boards of health and HHS, and these, as we've seen throughout the pandemic with my reporting and others, not as much as there should be, boards of health are being used as the kind of militarization arm, the suppression arm of the Biden administration. We at Daily Clout just defeated regulations that were being put into place in the state of Washington to allow the Board of Health to create concentration camps, essentially detention centers, where anyone exposed to a contagion of a bloodborne illness could be detained indefinitely, you know, pending a court order and with certain restrictions on their behavior, even in detention. Illinois has a similar bill. New York State has a similar bill, which is also under emergency law right now. People don't realize that in America, 33 states now are under emergency law. It used to be 47. My organization has been fighting hard to roll that back. But still, that's more than half the country. And now federally, to have these emergency powers means that President Biden, for whom I voted, I'm embarrassed to say, can really, first of all, keep bribing recipients of those billions to continue the drama of, you know, pandemic restrictions, masking of children, closing of businesses, and so on forever, right? But it also allows him to, they've started to kind of float the notion of the boards of health being responsible for mental health. And this is very, very scary, because what I see is that this money flowing around Congress, right? And, you know, Congress had nothing to do with it. It's not legislation. It soon will be criminalizing dissent, right? And allow the boards of health to say, oh, well, you know, Naomi, Gary, you know, you're dangerous dissidents, or you're mentally unstable because you have a problem with vaccine passports. You have a problem with tyranny in Canada. So, you know, we, the board of health, in our mercy, are going to, you know, intervene. So that's my fear. And there are other just old fashioned national security fears. In my essay, I pointed out that there are these unidentifiable but very fit kind of mercenary looking guys in black who are represented as police, or it's unclear what their status is, being super violent 2 weeks ago in Paris against the peaceful protesters. There are similar, you know, black or green clad, very fit. And I say very fit because municipal police, God bless them, tend not to be, you know, they don't usually look like Rambo, but these guys look like mercenaries, like contractors, professional soldiers, right, for hire. And they're unidentifiable, right? And these are the ones who have been trampling the protesters in Ottawa, you know, viciously beating them, behaving in a way that it's hard to get local police or even local military to behave against their own people. So my worry, and this is a worry I raised way back in 2008, is there are mercenary armies for hire, like Blackwater, which is now called She. You can hire mercenaries, you know, all over the world. And, you know, the UN, you know, deputizes its own military forces. We don't know who these people are. So, and we also know that there have been, you know, the open border to the south, there have been extraordinary numbers of kind of military age young men arriving alone, which is not standard for refugee crises. And they're being flown all over the country. So, to me, you know, there's some racism here that we're not more up in arms. If the border was open with Mexico, Mexico declared a dictatorship, Mexico was beating and rounding up and freezing assets of its own people and amassing these unidentifiable troops, essentially, you know, at our open southern border, we'd all be freaking out. But because Canadians are kind of, you know, what, you know, like, why aren't we freaking out? You know, it is so easy, especially if the Biden administration is in collusion with Trudeau to flow those troops across the border to have a situation in which, we're at war. And that's really why I've been saying the coup has already arrived, with emergency powers in the United States. The coup has already arrived. So we have to realize there is a war against us. It's being waged against us. And as you say, it is lockstep around the world. And I've been saying this for over a year. As a former political consultant, you can see clearly, that the Macron, Boris Johnson, Australia's Scott Morrison, Chrystia Freeland, Justin Trudeau, they're all reading from the same script. They all take the same steps in lockstep. And as you know, I've been warning for nearly 2 years that this is not about the vaccine. It's not about the virus. It is about totalitarian social control. And you're 1,000% right, Mr. Null, that the World Economic Forum is very open about their intentions. I just finished a new book that's forthcoming from All Seasons Press about this. And I've been reading, Klaus Schwab's two recent books. It's right there, it's his plans, his intentions, the way he's going to do it. I mean, he literally published this within the first 2 weeks of the pandemic when no one knew what was ahead. And he's basically saying people are going to be so disoriented, they will not know what is happening to them. And, that early commercial where he said, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. And China too, is very open, and China and the World Economic Forum are very much in alignment. They have white papers that people who watch China have presented. I've checked them. They're real. That intend for China to be the superpower by the year 2049, which is the 100th anniversary of the Great Revolution. And they are going to get there through kind of hegemonizing the world's health and dealing with a population that is preoccupied and concerned about its health, and also by stockpiling the DNA and health records of people around the world. I mean, this is, these are companies, this is a white paper, I can share it in the chat, it's real. And it's not a bad plan, if you want to be a global tyrannical hegemon. And so what I see is this incredible targeting of children, right? This bullying of parents to separate their authority from children, this, cruelty of masking children, taking away their lockers at one school where I went, so they were carrying around their books all the time, the closing of playgrounds, the ostracizing of children who try to unmask, whose parents try to unmask, the kind of a focus on subjugate, breaking their will, distancing, which is so unnatural and keeps human beings from learning from each other and forming bonds with each other. All of that is aimed less at you and me and more at the 2049 generation. They want to break in our children, in Western children, the habits of individualism, of questioning authority, of expecting freedom. And we're seeing the impacts, on our children. A Brown study showed a 21-point drop in IQ points for children, due to the masking and the diminished socialization. So it is what you say. I've been called a conspiracy theorist. Literally 99.5% of everything I've predicted step by step has come true. And not because I'm a genius, but because I study history deeply. And I've for 12 years been writing about the histories of how tyrants kill off democracies. And there's some basic steps, and these people are taking them in lockstep. And it has to be a global, peaceful, ideally, revolution of left and right together at the grassroots, coming together all over the world to resist these people.
I appreciate those input. By the way, I'm not Mr. Null, I'm Gary. I'm too young to be a mister.
I mean, thank you, Gary.
let me dot some of the I's on what you were just saying. I played a clip 2 weeks ago of Canada, the demonstrators, and it showed an aerial view, a drone, of all of the demonstrators all being peaceful, singing, sharing conversation, no violence whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But then, separately, there was a group of black-dressed people, we don't know who they were, don't have an identification, and there was this really muscular-looking guy in fatigues, and he was directing. I mean, literally, and this was taken by someone who was just about 20 feet away, and there was a guy with a camera, and suddenly the police that were all milling around and the black hooded shirt people milling around, suddenly these became the protesters and these became the police, and then they were charging each other and yelling, and then one of the police evidently hit one of the guys, and the guy went down on the ground, and he says, what are you doing, you know, I'm one of you, and this is all on camera. And mm-hmm. So they cut, and then they did other, it showed them running down a subway or into a basement, you know, that, and it showed them knocking on a door, trying to break a window. All of that was staged because you got to see the director of it and you got to see the cinematographer. And the only clips that were shown anywhere in America on network televisions were those clips. Now, you couldn't have that unless the deep state was involved. You couldn't allow that to happen. We have too many smart journalists, well-educated, who have good backgrounds, who have great resources, who in a heartbeat could say, well, hold on a second. We have seen no violence anywhere. And who are all these? You're saying that these black clothes people with hoods on and masks, these are the truckers? The truckers aren't hiding anything. You know, look at the trucker. Look at these bearded guys over there. And so, but that was the only thing the media covered. Now, to show you that you were also correct in tying in the people who, by the way, every one of the people you mentioned, plus about 500 more, including Bono and a lot of people who are well-known, those individuals all belong to Klaus Schwab's group of elites that were getting conditioned for the future. And this goes back 20 and 30 years, mm-hmm. right? So they've known each other. They've worked together. They're all under the same philosophical umbrella. But now you go to Berlin. Over 30 speakers in the giant square. There were over 1 million participants, no violence whatsoever. And Robert Kennedy Jr. was one of the speakers, and he talked about the fact that we don't have any neo-Nazis here. We have none of that here. We are all people who are concerned about the way that this is being handled. Now, I watch CNN. They talked about neo-Nazis getting 5,000 or so of them together. They were wrong. They couldn't have been wrong unintentionally. They have too many resources. They're too smart. When really smart, well-credentialed, organized people who have to go through a lot of fact-checking within their own ranks intentionally select something that has nothing to do with the reality on the ground, then they're working for a reason. And who's behind that is yet to be determined. And then the same thing happened in the Netherlands. Yes. You had over 1 million people, and you saw the videos. I had the videos of drones flying the entire route of all these people, all peaceful, not a single mm-hmm. singing. And yet mm-hmm. all you saw was a couple people being violent, and that's what the media went with. So all over the world, there is some larger issue that is being put into force, and the media has been completely complicit, which means the media, whether it agrees or disagrees with that position, whether it's right or left, is irrelevant. And you are correct again. This is not about left and right, which brings me to a theoretical construct, mm-hmm. a hypothesis, which could be right or wrong, in part or whole. I've written about 15 major articles on the danger of identity politics, the woke culture. And then it just occurred to me yesterday, is it possible that since the same cast of characters and the same media proponents and the same accepting everything that the woke and the identity politics does without ever challenging it, mm-hmm. is it possible that they're also doing this as a part of a drill to get people conditioned to believing they can't say anything, or to be considered racist or misogynist or homophobic. So people then self-censor. Is it also possible that doing this at this time and accelerating it, that they want social conditioning, where historical, cultural policies, programs, and beliefs are then left out of your life because you're afraid that you might be doing something, saying something, or believing in something, supporting something that will make you a victim of the erasure culture. And then you start seeing the enormous power that these people have. They have the complete control of Wikipedia. I've written 72 articles against Wikipedia. They control Wikipedia. They control Google. They control Facebook. They control Twitter. They control virtually all the media platforms. Mm-hmm. So how is it a coincidence that virtually everything, and I mean everything, no matter how absurd that the woke generation says something, that it's immediately taken as gospel from on high, and it must be followed. You cannot debate it. You cannot discuss it. There's no longer open discussion. There's no longer civil debate. And I'm now of the opinion, and we'll see if it's true or not, that this is just one piece of the puzzle to get us to conform to everything, so we will own nothing, and they will be the stakeholders, by the way. They don't tell you who's going to own what you own.
Right.
And so what do you think of those ideas, please?
I mean, I think you're once again, I think you're right. I don't mean to be like that guest who keeps agreeing with you, but I really do agree with you about this. And I think it goes even further than what you've correctly identified. Let me just say, for those who are listening who aren't familiar with my work, that I am, you know, for most of my career, I've been the darling of the left and the darling of the media. And I come from the left, right? I advised a Democratic presidential campaign, a Democratic vice president in his campaign. I was instrumental in defining third wave feminism. And all of my kind of belief systems as a progressive classical liberal were about equality, open discussion, freedom of speech, people being evaluated for their own merit and not their race or gender. And then in about the mid-90s, early 2000s, I began to see the definition of being on the left start to change in a way that I didn't recognize. And like, even as a feminist, I started to say, no, we don't hate men. I don't believe in a phrase, toxic masculinity. That's really a damaging phrase. You know, no, I don't think there are things that shouldn't be discussed. No, I don't agree that, if you talk to someone on the right, you're, somehow selling out or colluding with evil. I don't believe any of these things. And then in the pandemic, I stuck to my usual, progressive liberal beliefs in not creating a two-tier discrimination society based on vaccine status and critical thinking about what you put in your body and my body, my choice. And as a result, because of the pressures on the media that you describe, which I've traced some of the money and it's millions flowing from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to the BBC, to NPR, to PBS, to the New York Times, to the Guardian, right? For COVID education, right? So as a result of the corruption of the media and this kind of redefinition of what it is to be right on as a little Stalinist, now I'm seeing the exact same things I've always done, and I've been violently deplatformed from every major platform and thrust away from all the sites I've been writing for, having columns on for 35 years. And now, the only people who talk to me about liberty and democracy are people like you and the libertarians and conservatives, which is very distressing, right? Even though I think there are millions of liberals who are probably listening to this and kind of quietly wanting to find that, open, free speech, egalitarian society, and are scared to. And this is what I hear. So just to say, yes, there is people have to understand about influence campaigns, which is what this is, that you don't, bad guys don't have to believe in what they're saying everyone needs to believe in order to construct a kind of ideological third rail that will then allow them to meet their own goals. And a perfect example I use all the time is that you know, Bush too, and his administration, you know, Vice President Cheney, so on, they didn't care about the education of Afghani schoolgirls. Afghani schoolgirls have been discriminated against for decades, but they used feminism and, oh, these poor schoolgirls can't go to school, as a rationale to get America on board with the invasion of Afghanistan, when they otherwise wouldn't have been thrilled about spending blood and treasure, you know, in a part of the world that wasn't directly threatening them. So this happens over and over and over. And 1,000%, I see these words, you know, newly defined equity instead of equality. That's a totally different thing, right? Equity is socialism. Equity is handing over resources and money to people on the basis of their skin color. That is not American. That's not what Martin Luther King, Dr. Martin Luther King, was fighting for, right? He was fighting for equality, which is different, which is about a meritocracy, an inclusive, fair society. I see the absolutely the public deplatforming and shaming, mine included. You've been deplatformed. Most of the people I respect have been deplatformed, as a message to everyone else who might dare question any of these narratives or engage with them critically, that this too will happen to them. And now I did want to say, adding on to that, and I see it in my own professional life, where we at Daily Clout, we are, you know, totally committed to open debate. You know, the Constitution is our only kind of, we're nonpartisan except for supporting the Constitution, which is not a partisan position. I can't get liberal points of view, liberal writers. I can't get liberal, you know, associate editors to hire, because they're so scared that if we even go report on the truckers, or literally because I talk to Tucker Carlson or I talk to Steve Bannon, because I'll talk to anyone about the Constitution, right? Doesn't mean I agree with them on every policy goal they have. You know, they're so scared that they'll never be able to work again if they, you know, work for a company or you know, engage with people who don't, who might think something else. So this is real. And this is how the Nazis, may I say, solidified their power. And I've written an essay about this on my Substack. And I'm not talking about the later years of the Nazi regime. I'm talking about 1930 to 1933, before Hitler was chancellor. They solidified power by exactly creating huge amounts of support and money flowing to people who aligned with National Socialism, and by you know, punishing, ostracizing, closing businesses, boycotting people who did not align with him. And so then to bring this kind of riff to a close, what happened in Canada with the freezing of bank assets, and one of the truckers saying his wife's credit score dropped 109 points, even though she hadn't been present protesting even, and the closure of the business that provided coffee to the truckers. All of these things couldn't happen in a democracy, right? Because there are laws against them. But what's so scary about this methodology of punishing dissent, which is a new technology, because previously you wouldn't have been able to kind of so easily digitize and freeze, you know, people's, you know, physical dollars in the bank or gold bars in the bank or whatever. You know, there was privacy, it was inaccessible without a court order. What's so scary about that is that it's affecting me and the choices that I'm making, because I expect that it'll come here as well. The bank I bank in, TD Bank, froze the assets of peaceful protesters in Canada. So I'm immediately thinking, got to move my money. And I'm even rethinking, as a journalist, I was going to go out and join, you know, the convoy as a reporter. And now I'm thinking, can I really risk my company having our assets frozen if they go that route? So I guess I'm just being honest about that, because this is a new benchmark in tyranny, the freezing of assets for people who are engaged in peaceful protest. Again, you can't do that in a democracy. You have to convict the person as a terrorist. You know, they have to have a sentence from a judge or a jury, and or be part of like an FBI investigation. You can't just say, okay, you're frozen. And that is going to absolutely chill dissent. It's terrifying. And they're kind of racing past the establishment of a vaccine passport, which I warned way back in March of last year was going to be a social credit score, there's been resistance to that. So they're kind of bypassing it and going right to, well, we're going to freeze your assets anyway. We're going to, you know, freeze your PayPal. We're going to freeze your Stripe. We're going to, you know, drop your credit score with private companies colluding with this tyranny. And that is the future down here if we do not mobilize quickly. And honestly, you know, this is why my latest essays have been about treason, because President Biden, President Macron, Boris Johnson to some extent, and certainly Justin Trudeau are, to my mind, clearly guilty of treason. And treason is a very serious crime, and it has very serious penalties, especially in the United States. And it is way past time for patriots to peacefully, you know, levy charges of treason against these leaders and try them and hopefully convict them and lock them up. Because they have waged war against, you know, Justin Trudeau waged war against Canada. And in my mind, President Biden is waging war against the United States and its constitution.
Very insightful. Thank you very much for those insights. Here's one of the issues that I see as a big deterrent to having anyone indicted. I do believe that we will begin to see the tide of this battle change when Fulmich and the hundreds of lawyers who are working with him begin to bring actual lawsuits that are then sustained and not thrown out on summary judgment. And this will happen at different levels. School boards are being sued and people are speaking up. The silent majority has finally found its voice. I've said for a long time when people say, Gary, how many demonstrations have you led? And I said, probably 200. And if you think you're on the side of liberal and progressive, take a look at the 50 things that I have supported, major movements, universal health care, where I actually sent every member of Congress, I sent all the media, a article showing them that we could save $1.7 trillion a year, saved, that we could have universal health care and preventative care and more complementary care that has been shown to work instead of the kind of care we get now, which emergency care works, most of it doesn't, rejected. I also showed them how we could take all money out of politics and have really fair elections where a cab driver could run for governorship, not just someone who was selected by a hidden group of people like, for example, Bill Clinton was selected by Mrs. Harriman. Are you familiar with Mrs. Harriman?
I mean, yes, but I didn't know she selected Bill Clinton.
She's the one who selected. Yeah, her group selected Clinton. I happen to know this because I did some expose on Bill and Hillary Clinton before they were even running, when he was just attorney general before he was governor. And I had exposed him. And then a friend of mine, I'll just give you one quick little aside example. One of my friends at that time there were two people that married, and they were power brokers, New York, in Democratic politics. They were extremely powerful and well-liked. Mm-hmm. And the wife says, Gary, come over because we're having a fundraiser for the Clintons when he was running for president. And I said, what do you know about the Clintons? Well, they're young, they're dynamic, and they have this concept of the new Democrat. What's the new Democrat? Mm-hmm. And how does that change from the traditional historical liberal? And she couldn't answer that. And then I said, I'm going to share some stuff with you. So I went out to her in a whole afternoon, and I gave her all my documentation, all of which was meticulous. I broadcast it. And as you know, if you broadcast it because something's not true, they're going to be on in a heartbeat.
Sure.
No, it was crickets. And when I showed her how they were corrupt, and everything about the Rose Law Firm and Hillary Clinton and her activities, she looked at me and she says, this is the key. She says, Gary, I'm going to have about 200 people here at our townhouse over on the east side this weekend. I want you to come. Now, do you believe that any of those people like the Clintons or believe in them? None of them do. She says, we already know about the Clintons. She says, they're new to the world, But we at least we know this, that they have been selected and they will be elected. And every one of the people coming own businesses that will benefit. And they'll give checks, and they'll give big checks. The world won't know about the checks they're giving at that group. But for every $100 you get $1,000 to $2,000 in return in favors or some form of benefit later down the road. She said, for the first time in American history, ex-presidents of the United States will become multi-millionaires because of all the favors they do. And you won't know about it. It won't be on a computer. And that's exactly what happened. So I'm thinking, I thought all those people, dumb me, I thought the people coming, you know, for these private get-togethers were friends or like them. Not at all. They just knew that these were extremely pliable people. And look at what has happened to the Clintons. Nothing except they've made for their foundation themselves hundreds of billions of dollars for the foundation, multi-millions for themselves. No matter what crisis they get into, there's always some way that it stops. So now tie this to what you were just saying. 2 weeks ago, I broadcast an original program about the monopolists. And what it was a gigantic chart. And the chart is an accurate chart that shows the, for example, the entertainment industry, the media companies, the seven major media companies like Disney, for example, and Comcast. And you think, well, those are the companies that make their own, you know, policies, et cetera. And then you look at the banking companies. They're all different, right? Morgan, J.P. Morgan and Chase. And then you look at the food companies like Monsanto and Synergy. All of those companies, all of them, every single one in every industry is owned by five companies. BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street, Berkshire Hathaway, a few more. But BlackRock and Vanguard are the top two. And yet no one ever heard of these companies and no one ever knew who they were. And how they own them is that they own shares. For example, if you look at Google and Facebook and Twitter, you think they're individuals, individually owned. They're not. You think Mark Zuckerberg, you know, controls Facebook. He does not. Who controls any corporations, the board of directors? Because they, as you know, have a fiduciary responsibility to create a gain of wealth for the stock and the company to grow it. And yet, the people that bought the stock in the company, and we showed the chart, 60%, 37%, 68% of the entire stock in the company is owned by these companies. Then they own each other's companies. Now, so what you're talking about is this. You name a single industry, airlines, they own them. Banks, they own all of them around the world, not just here. Manufacturing. They own Pepsi-Cola and Coca-Cola.
Wow.
And you thought they were different companies. They own both. They own Spotify, and they own Moderna.
Oh, my gosh.
So who do you think is going to win in that? Well, Moderna, thank goodness, is collapsing. It's lost 73% of its value. And Pfizer's also losing. That's a separate issue. But guess who's making the expose? The only person we've ever heard of, ever, to be a whistleblower out of any of these big mega groups is a man who's now, he was a portfolio manager for BlackRock, and he is shorting the stocks and showing that the studies were fraudulent. That's why they want 75 Dowd? Years. Huh? Yes, Dowd. So he's exposing them. And as a result.
He said he's not shorting them. I'm just curious. If you have different information, he said he hopes other people short them, but he deliberately.
You are correct. And what is happening is he said, Wall Street is realizing that Wall Street's big investors are the major groups, your unions, your pension funds.
Right.
If they find out that these studies that made all this possible, these vaccines were fraudulent, and that's what he's saying, and he would be sued if he was wrong. And then you have, and he's providing the proof, and they're now getting out, and as they're pulling themselves out, because someone's going to have to take a loss on this.
Sure.
And even though they've been indemnified, if in their indemnification it was shown that they intentionally, with malice aforethought, hid information, then they're no longer indemnified. Then the insurance companies are going to pull away from them. So who then is going to take the fall? All the people who invested, their stock's going to go to zero, both companies, and all of this is going to crumble, and trillions of dollars is going to be lost, and then you'll have your criminal indictments. So that's what's happening in the background. But I just want to mention that when we think that maybe we can convince this industry or that industry to change its policies, we're not aware of who really controls, because whoever controls the stock, a majority of the stock controls the board of directors. Whoever controls the board, that's where policy is set. And we've been looking too close, not far enough into this to see how deep this is. So everything you're seeing is controlled by those people. Your thoughts, please.
No, it makes perfect sense. And I've been slowly becoming aware of some of what you say. I wasn't aware of all of it. BlackRock, a huge factor in pandemic policies is the killing of the middle class and the killing of small businesses and independent businesses. And, I've been writing in my upcoming book about how this is a real estate play, among other things. And it's driving, what are the cities that have the most draconian, masking and vaccine requirements? San Francisco, Boston, Los Angeles, New York City. These are the most desirable in terms of real estate. So you kill restaurants, you kill small landlords, those immigrants or single parents who saved up, forever for that one asset and they can't hold on. You give the CDC the power to, suspend evictions, which is not a medical thing. But what happens when you suspend evictions for 6 months? It sounds kind of compassionate superficially if you're not a tiny property owner, but it's the institutional investors who can afford to wait 6 months without revenue. Small landlords, those immigrant families who scraped and saved, for that one piece of property, they have been driven out. And I saw in January this drop in value and prices in Harlem apartments that I was looking at that time, of 20% on the same day. And I realized it was because the CDC stopped, holding back evictions. And so poor landlords that couldn't afford to survive had only 2 weeks to evict non-paying tenants, paint, and then put their properties on the market at fire sale prices. The reason I say that is that BlackRock snapped up 15% of the housing stock in the last 2 years and is creating, as Klaus Schwab promised, a rentier society as opposed to an ownership society. And, so many of the pandemic policies that really don't seem to make sense do make sense if the goal is to drive the small businesses, the independent. I mean, a small business gives you independence as a middle class, and it also keeps some of those assets competitive to, these giant companies that that these five companies own. And so the pandemic policies kind of crush that last remaining bulwark of independence and resistance and siphoned off all of those assets. So I completely believe and am persuaded that these few giant, shareholding companies are pulling the strings in a big way. I guess my question there is, what is the act of resistance to that? I guess it would have to be some form of shareholder activism, right? Or boycotting. I mean, those are tough nuts to crack at that level. What do you recommend?
Well, first of all, I mentioned yesterday to my audience, when a person asked if they're freezing funds in Canada and they could do the same thing in the United States, and now the truckers are aligning to go in the United States to Washington, they've already called out the National Guard. So they're pushing the button for the National Defense Authorization Act, which, by the way, means you can be arrested without any cause known. You're all the normal habeas corpus rules are completely gone. They could keep you in detention forever.
Yeah, I was in the courtroom when that was argued, by the way, and I was horrified to see Obama's lawyers arguing in favor of indefinite detention of journalists. That really happened. You're absolutely right.
And I also remember the different journalists who were, you know, praising his kill list. Remember his Tuesday morning kill list? Yeah, as if something that was good. Who's going to kill today? No one you know. Someone who deserves to die.
Right.
In any case, I suggested gold in possession, silver in possession, and treasury notes, because the United States government will not create bankruptcy.
Right.
But at least you hold those. Now, this morning at 4 o'clock this morning when I was writing, I looked up and gold was went from 1,800 an ounce to 2,600 an ounce. It'll probably come back down to around 2,000 ounce. But watch what happens when you start seeing a crisis in the equity market, and you will. The equity market is at least double in inflated value of what its actual value is. And the largest majority of people in the equity or in the equity market are going to be these big pensions. So for the person who doesn't get involved, who stays silent, who's not committed, who's retired, mm-hmm. I got my pension, I got my health care, I'm okay. You think so? Where do you think that health care money is coming from? You're paying no attention. So we have to rouse the interest and conscience of all the retirees, because it's the retirees who hold the largest amount of money in the United States. It is those individuals who saved and put their money in the bank and think it's going to be safe in the bank. It is not. Mm-hmm. Remember on New Year's Eve, the last year of his last few days of his presidency, he put the bail-in bill through on New Year's Eve when no one knew about it, which just like the Cyprus, where if the banks go bad, all of your money becomes out of the bank and you get some worthless little percentage certificate of stock ownership in it. So I believe those are the three things we do. And if you own property and you had no mortgage, good. But if you've got a mortgage, and if your mortgage is based upon your income, and if your mortgage is higher than what your income is over a three-year period, then I would suggest you sell, because we're going to see the housing market go through the roof, artificial inflation. And who's going to end up buying all those bankrupt? You named it exactly, Naomi. It is Blackwater. Oh, by the way, maybe it's just a coincidence. Maybe it has nothing to do with anything. But corporation or which foundation is the head of BlackRock, a member of the board?
Bill and Melinda Gates?
Klaus Schwab's World Economic Forum.
Wow, there you go.
Okay, there you go. I mean, you see how these pieces come together?
There you have it. I mean, it's pretty easy. You know, I wish people would stop being cowed by the phrase conspiracy theorist, which is just kind of, I think, weaponized to keep people from thinking critically about systems. I'm a Rhodes Scholar, as you mentioned, and so I'm a member of a community that of kind of elites who are global and who communicate with each other, and they're not doing this kind of nefarious thing, but I can tell you that it's pretty easy to change policy, change the course of history. If you've got like 1,400 people graduating every year who know each other, who are networked, and who go on to kind of run the institutions in countries around the world. So you've added pieces to a puzzle that are really important, that really demonstrate that, you know, between BlackRock and Klaus Schwab and China, you know, and Bill and Melinda Gates, it, you know, you can redirect the course of history with, you know, 5,000 people, you know, read in to the direction it's going to take, and you can change the course of markets. So I would add to your list of what people should do. I'm expecting, especially leading up to the midterms, I expect it to be a very dangerous time. I'll just say that. And I expect that there will be the Democrats, and again, I voted for him, so I apologize, but they will do everything possible to not have a verifiable vote for the midterms. And so I expect there to be a kind of a new January 6th. I'm very worried about, you know, infiltrators and sort of staged violence, like the kind you described, you know, with the convoys. I'm worried about power outages, and I'm really worried about cyber attacks that go to what you were just describing in terms of people's assets. So I've been telling people, get a generator, you know, get a food supply, know where your food comes from, make friends with a farmer, but also print out your records and have hard copies of them, because if everything is digital, it's very easy to say, oh, sorry, we just, you know, there was this cyber attack from Russia, you know, your stuff is gone. And that, you know, with the freezing of assets of dissidents, I think no strategy is irrational to think through about how people can be, you know, harmed and disempowered in the months ahead. We all need to prepare, I would recommend. And I also want to know from you where to buy gold. I don't really understand where to buy gold.
Well, you can buy it at any of the, there's at least 100 places like Rosalind Capital. You don't, the key is only buy a spot gold. Do not buy any of the coins based upon their heritage. That's where they make their extra money. That's the upsell. Oh, if you buy this, because at the end of the day, it is only the weight of the silver, the weight of the gold, and the purity of it that is going to count. Dimes are the best investment.
Because no kidding.
Easily a straight. Yeah, dimes are your best. And quarters behind that. And with gold, get your low denomination. Get it in. Never take a certificate. Never under any circumstance take a certificate. Have it in your home and then hide it. But here's what the people are.
Now, we're back to 1931. Like, this is what my grandparents were doing when, you know, like they were sewing jewels in their hands.
I just finished a little film here. I'm at my animal sanctuary where I rescue animals and bring them back to health and life and find them a loving home for life. And a barn was blown down 3 years ago. So I repurposed the barn into a hydroponic growing. And I showed how, for a very little amount of money, we're talking about like $7,000, I got all the equipment, hooked it all up, and now I have about 900 plants growing. You can grow every kind of fruit and vegetable, and it takes about 18 days. That's one-third, one-half of what it would take normally.
And why isn't everyone doing that? That's so smart.
Because they're not aware of it. I also am doing freeze drying. So you buy a freeze dryer, you put the food in, 30 hours later, you take it out, and it's good, packed at 97% taste, quality, and ingredient potency for 25 years.
That's amazing. So, we did buy a dehydrator, so we're there. My husband is all about the dehydrator, so thank you for that information.
And
is
then make more? Sure.
Is there more we should be doing?
Yes, the dehydrator will last for about 3 years. But you need, because you can still get mold on it. And fungus, what you need is it costs you about $5,000, but it's worth it. Stainless steel, commercial size, about the size of a washing machine.
Oh, so and that's a different process.
Yeah, and it freeze dries it and seals it.
So
good. You take a case of nuts you buy wholesale, let's say organic almonds and cashews and pecans, and then you put them all in racks. Boom, they all fit. Like a 40-pound bag will fit in something like this. Plastic fits. So, and then try to get, just make sure that you have a backup commercial generator, a Generex, one that can power everything. And the ideally get yourself 1,000 to 2,000 gallon propane tanks, because propane works off force gravitational pull, and therefore you don't need electricity. So when the lights go off for whatever reason, a storm or a cyber attack, you're going to have your electricity. You're going to have your water pump, because without that, you don't have no water. And you have no air conditioning, heat, internet, or anything else. So simple things.
Notes.
These are not expensive.
We're taking notes. We're taking notes. This is incredibly good information.
And I did an 8-hour webinar on this. I'll send it to you today. You'll get it on how to survive by getting off the grid. I had nearly 8 million daily followers on Facebook 6 years ago, and I just stopped. I want to get off. I got off the grid. I'm not on Twitter. I never Twitter. I'm not on any of the social media. And as a result, when I have something important, like a hard-hitting documentary, I put it on Rumble, or I'll put it on one of those, you know, other sites that are not going to censor me. As long as we pull away from using their credit cards. We pull away from buying their clothes. We pull away from using reading the New York Times or watching them on MSNBC or other. We then start pulling back power, then start looking at collectives, people who, like you said, you're a Rhodes Scholar. Then a lot of those Rhodes Scholars, unfortunately, not all, but a lot of them went right back in because of their knowledge and their scholarship into good paying positions at Wall Street or major corporate America. Sure. And a lot of them ended up over the years, we're talking about thousands of them, ended up being influenced by the World Economic Forum's advanced program for world leaders that no one knew about. So now we can say, thank you, I don't want that anymore. I'm going to buy locally grown organic produce. I'm not going to go into Whole Foods. All right? We're out of time, Naomi. Thank you very much for coming on today and sharing your thoughts.
I am so grateful and happy to have spoken to you, Gary, and thank you for all the work you're doing for humanity. We really need your leadership. Thank you so much. And thank
you to
your team.
It's time for us not to deal in identity politics, join hands, respect all life, respect the spiritual in all people, and respect that we work together, we're stronger. And they're counting upon us being complicit in our own demise, of engaging in hubris, indifference, apathy, and depression. We're not. Thank you all for watching and listening. I'm Gary Nall with Naomi Wolf. She's having that webinar tonight, 7:30. You don't want to miss that.